Money Psychology. Money Psychology.
Every time you reach for your wallet, check your balance, or make a choice with money, you're not just counting dollars. You're replaying what you soaked up long before you had words for it. I'm Elliot Graves, and this is Money Psychology. Anyway, what this brings up for me is my old ceramic piggy bank. I can still hear the coins hitting the bottom. And the part I didn't expect as a kid, that sudden weight of don't mess this up. It felt like being handed secret rules to adulthood. A rule book is exactly how it landed for me too, but it showed up as my first bank account with my dad. The teller slid over that little blue passbook, and wow, I treated it like a passport. If I lost it, I thought the money would vanish with it. I'm curious, how much of that first awe or fear do you think still drives what we do with money now? More than we think. Those first scenes lay down a template we keep acting from. Not just what we did, save, spend, but what it meant. Serious, playful, risky, safe. Right, like we're following stage directions we never noticed. Let's actually poke at how cracking open that coin bank set the tone for whether we build or blow up our finances now. And map how those early touches shape attitudes and habits decades later. Not as nostalgia, but as the default settings we still run on. It's like the lines were written in invisible ink. We move through life thinking we chose this set, when really it was built when we were 5 or 6. The image that sticks for me is how serious that blue book felt. Money equaled duty, not fun, not joy. A thing to manage and honestly worry about. The emotional tone is everything. Was it presented as a prize, a chore, or a background hum of stress at home? That mood ends up tinting every decision after. Did your pig feel like play or pressure? Both. I loved the clink and the growing heft. And at the same time, there was this steady pressure. Don't break it. Keep feeding it. The point became stockpiling itself, not what the money could make possible. The goal was a heavy, full bank. So the lesson wasn't save for something. It was just save. Yeah, and I see it now. I'm excellent building balances and slower to spend on things that would actually add joy or ease. Using it feels like smashing that ceramic and doing something wrong. Like breaking the first rule. Exactly. And that's how we end up with very different money personalities from the same world. Yours says money is for holding. Mine says it's for guarding. Someone else might have had a grandparent pressing a dollar into their hand every visit. So money became a quick spark of affection, which can turn into big-hearted, even impulsive, spending. Love equals giving, so money becomes the delivery system. Or the flip. If we can't afford that was the daily refrain, the kid absorbs a constant sense of not enough, a scarcity lens. That scarcity lens can be brutal because it doesn't care about reality. You could have millions and still feel your stomach drop over choosing the pricier coffee. The old dinner table line is still running the show, a ghost in the ledger. And we rarely question where it came from. We just call it reality. Money is stressful. Money is for hoarding. We're reciting lines we never auditioned for, and we mistake those lines for identity. I don't think I'm obeying an old rule about hoarding. I think I'm a responsible, frugal person. We wrap our sense of self around those rules. We even dress it up. The scarcity-driven person doesn't say, "I was taught to fear lack." They say, "I'm practical. I don't waste." The rule starts to look like a virtue, which makes changing it feel like betrayal, not just of a habit, but of who you are. Exactly. You're not swapping a budgeting app. You're challenging a character you've played for years. So where do you start? It's like trying to see the air you're breathing. Look for what I'd call financial dissonance, when your emotional reaction is wildly out of sync with the actual event. Say more. Okay, tiny example. You get a small, unexpected refund. $20. Objectively minor. For one person, it's pure delight, like winning a mini lottery. That usually points to a story where money felt rare and magical. Wait. 20 or 200? 20, which is what makes the big reaction interesting. Got it. And someone else hears refund and instantly feels pressure. Right. They start spinning. Where do I put it? What if I use it wrong? Their body reacts like that little sum is life or death. That mismatch is the tell. Your nervous system is telling an old story your balance isn't. I felt it as you said it. That urge to optimize a tiny windfall perfectly. It's tiring. Because you're running the legacy program. Your adult brain knows it's small. Your five-year-old still hears, don't you waste that. So the move is to notice the overreaction and treat it like a flare lighting up the old set. Yes, become an observer of your money feelings. Right before a purchase, if guilt knots your stomach, don't accept it as just me. Ask, whose voice is this? Is it mine or an echo? An echo. Exactly. From a conversation I barely understood at 6. And seeing it as an echo strips its authority. It isn't truth. It's a recording that's been looping. If you can hear the loop, can you change the track? Or are we stuck with the background music? You don't delete the original. It's in the source code. But you can layer over it. You can drown it out by making deliberate present-day choices. Intentionally creating new money memories. Yes. If your old rule is only hoard, then you purposefully spend a small amount on pure joy. Buy the concert ticket. Take the short trip. But here's the key. Notice the good feeling it creates. You're drafting a new scene. At first, it'll feel downright transgressive, like breaking a sacred rule. It will. The old lines will shout, guilt, anxiety, you do it anyway. Next time, they're quieter. Then, quieter. You're building a new soundtrack, one you chose. So you don't fight the old ghost. You befriend a new story. I like that. You're authoring something you can actually live inside. When I zoom out, it's wild how much rests on those first moments. A ceramic pig, a little blue book, a sentence overheard over dinner. And then somehow, careers, investments, our sense of safety stack on top of that. And that's hopeful. The issue usually isn't I'm bad with money. It's I'm on a draft I didn't write. You get to pick up the pen for the next chapter. The rewrite is the tool we have. Seeing the narrative is what makes rewriting possible. Good place to stop. Thanks for walking through it with me. Thank you. Before we sign off, I'm going to try something simple. The next time I make a money move that surprises me, an impulse buy or an overly cautious investment, I'll pause and ask, whose voice is steering this and what early memory is it tied to? Knowing our money psychology doesn't guarantee perfect choices. It just gives us a chance to choose based on today instead of yesterday's fears and dreams.